Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest episode of the Cuarta Líneas podcast. I'm your host, Zach Lowy, and I'm here today with an amazing guest, with Tomas da Cunha. Tomas is one of the best analysts in Portugal, and I always enjoy reading his tweets, and so it's really awesome to finally have him here on the show. I reckon we could do this podcast in about the Bundesliga, about Ligue 1, about La Liga, so many different leagues, such as Tomas's knowledge. But we're going to be mainly focusing on Portuguese football, as is customary, with Cuarta Líneas. How are you doing, Tomas? And first off, can you tell me a little bit about your career? Because, you know, you are a commentator on 11 Sports and TSF Radio, and you are also the creator of Onze Medios. So talk to me a little bit about how you got started and how you got to be one of the best analysts in Portugal, if not in Europe.
Hello, Zach. Hello, everyone. First of all, thank you for the appreciation, and thank you for the invitation, of course. It's amazing how an American guy is so interested in Portuguese league and Portuguese football, and with so many knowledge. Thank you for the invitation. And in my case, I was a commentator on 11 Sports, like you said, and on TSF, but I was a freelancer. I hope I expressed well in English, but in my case, Portuguese football was my passion earlier, but I discovered many football in earlier ages, and then I hoped to work more to get the best knowledge possible.
Absolutely. It's an honor to have you on, and I'm super excited because we've got a lot to talk about. First thing that I want to get into, typically the biggest game of the season, but it seemed like it lost a bit of relevancy yesterday because of the circumstances. Porto and Benfica coming into play yesterday, just right before the Europa League semifinals, one day after Sporting's 2-0 victory over Juve. 1-1 draw, Everton Cebolinha opening the scoring for the Aguias with a tremendous goal, Mateus Uribe evening the scoreline later on with, you know, a few minutes left. So I wouldn't say that either side is happy from that result. I think the only team that's happy from that is Sporting, because the fact that Porto didn't win is another massive step in helping them secure their what will be their first title in 19 years. I think that this game, Superclásico, followed the pattern of what we've seen for the most part in big games in Portugal this season. You know, pretty cagey, a lot more talk about the fouls and a lot of controversial calls rather than any, you know, standout performer or any tactical setup. You know, I definitely think it was more determined by that. A lot of controversial calls that we can get into, such as, you know, Marega and Vertonghen, Sergio Oliveira and Weigl was another. So a lot of controversial calls, but at the end of the day, neither team, I think, is satisfied. Benfica probably less satisfied than Porto, but at the end of the day, the only team that's satisfied from this result is Sporting, because this means that Porto don't keep distance with them, and means that Sporting are pretty much guaranteed to win their first league title in the next week, okay? So, Tomas, what did you make of this game? I believe you were at the game, and what did you make of it?
Yes, totally. I was at the stadium, and in the end, was totally clear that neither one of the teams was happy with the result. Porto was better. I think it was clear during the first 80 minutes of the game. In the last 10 minutes, Porto tried to get the victory. That create more spaces back to Benfica, export counterattacks with Darwin Núñez on the side of João Mário, that is a winger, an offensive player, and the Benfica could get the victory also. But tactically, I think Sérgio Conceição was better than Jorge Jesus, with Otávio more advanced to press the Benfica's center backs, and then Porto creates many difficulties to Benfica to build up, to get some occasions in the first half. We get the first demonstration of talent with the goal of Everton's Bolinha. It's clearly in the better period as a Benfica player, clearly. It was the third consecutive game of Everton's Bolinha, creating a goal for Benfica, assisting or scoring. it's clearly was a disappointment during the most part of the season, but now we are seeing the best Everton Cebolinha. Benfica season is a disappointment also, and didn't get the win in neither of Clásicos, ni Sporting or Porto. Benfica was incapable of getting the 3 points in every case. Jorge Jesus has established this system with three in the back, three in the front also, with Everton Cebolinha and Rafa supporting Seferovic. But Benfica has many difficulties to impose themselves in the big games.
Absolutely. No Tecatito Corona for this game, so a bit difficult for Porto, but I'm not sure I'd say that they were the better team. They definitely did have more concerted, long consecutive runs of possession, whereas I thought Benfica tried to build up kind of quickly and trying to exploit Porto's weaknesses with the pace of Everton, as well as Hafa. I thought Hafa was, you know, incredible. Very, very important in that, in causing Porto a lot of difficulties. I want to get your take, though, on one thing that I think may change, and it's Benfica's back three. So yesterday we saw Benfica once again play with the back three. Porto tried to exploit the spaces in between Grimaldo and Vertonghen, right, trying to, you know, taking advantage of Vertonghen's lack of space by kind of the same thing that they did in the Sporting match, you know, trying to flood in balls to Marega, as well as, you know, getting Manafa involved to some degree and trying to exploit that. You definitely would have more expertise on this than I would. But do you think that a back three is the way forward for Benfica for under Jorge Jesus? I mean, we've seen how much benefits it can bring in the form of Sporting's title that they're about to win. But do you think it's the right choice for this Benfica team?
I think this option of Jorge Jesus explains for the necessity, the need of Benfica to get Otamendi, Vertonghen and Lucas Veríssimo in the same 11. Are strong players. Vertonghen have suffered with Marega's movements in the back. So I think Jorge Jesus will have to establish this system, because I think there are no options to exclude Vertonghen, Otamendi or Lucas Veríssimo for the 11 right now. And this system permits that Diogo Gonçalves can advance in the right side, and Grimaldo also in the left side. Grimaldo is a weak player defensively, have problems, and with Vertonghen in the back, Benfica could have more stability. But Marega also caused problems. So it was clearly for who have assisted the game. Lucas Veríssimo, in my opinion, was the more solid player in the defensive back three of Benfica. In the aerial duels and in anticipation, also protecting the box, it was, for me, the best Benfica's player in this game.
What would you say about the people who think that Grimaldo would be a good fit for Paris Saint-Germain's left-back problem?
He's a creative left-back, technically evolved, but with many problems defensively. To protect his back, he's a player who didn't evolve so much in the last years. This season, it's not the best of Grimaldo as Benfica player. This system, okay, it's it permits that Grimaldo get in more in front and not so responsibly defensively, but I think the player has some limitations for the highest level.
I completely agree with that. Moving on to Everton, though, because I think that outside of Veríssimo, I thought he was probably Benfica's best performer, you know, had a phenomenal goal to put them in the lead. Been a great month for him. Not a great season, but, you know, you are seeing him catching fire in the home stretch of the season. I think that definitely points well for next season, because it seems like he's adapted to, you know, taking that adaptation from Brazil to Portugal. In the past month, we've seen him produce an assist against Passos de Ferreira, get a goal against Portimonense, and score against Tondela and Porto in his last two games. Talk to me about Everton. What have you made of his season? Just how important is he going to be for the Aguias going forward? And what do you think he needs to improve on to take the next step?
I think the 4-4-2 system that Jorge Jesus used in earlier of the season didn't benefit the skills of Everton Cebolini. He's a wing player, a player to receive open, to get the ball and then advance in situations of one against one in the Benfica's model. Didn't get comfort. We didn't see Everton Cebolini of Brazil, of Grêmio, and a confident player who gets risks in a one against one. But now we are seeing that Everton. And I think it's clear that Jorge Jesus, maybe the system, brings more confidence to Everton Cebolini. He gets more risks really now. It obviously brings more benefits to Benfica. It's a great player, an amazing player, a great investment also. And this disappointment could be also maybe compensated for the next season.
One of the great things about having you on here is that you do watch a decent amount, not just of European, but South American football too. You are clued up on, you know, all these players coming in from Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, so on and so on. Talk to me about another Grêmio player who's about to go to Portugal, going the other way this time though, going to Porto, Pepe. So like Everton, right, Pepe really started to showcase his skills at Grêmio, and Porto have already lined up a deal to bring him in. Is he going to be a Tecatito replacement? That remains to be seen. What do you make of Pepe? Do you think he's going to have a similar season to that of Everton? Where do they differentiate, and where do they share similarities as players?
Yes, I think they have more similarities than differences. Pepe is also a left winger. He's a right-footed player, but he plays mostly on the left side. Soon attack the area. He's a player with goal. It's a player with many paces, a great player attacking spaces. And I think it will fit perfectly in Porto's system with Sergio Conceição. Probably Tecatito Corona or Luis Diaz are being transferred in the next market. But I think Pepe is possibly the best signing of Porto to attack in the last months. Pepe is a young player. He's a player with so many time to evolve, to adapt to Portuguese football. But I think in terms of skills, in terms of ability to score goals, it's a certain sign for Porto.
What did you think of Luis Diaz yesterday, right? Getting the start on the left flank of Porto's 4-4-2 in the place of Tecatito. How did you think he did? Do you think that he's shown a lot of flashes, a lot of impressive performances, but hasn't really managed to nail down a place in the starting 11? Conceição typically preferring to go with that Uribe and Sergio Oliveira double pivot. By the way, for anybody who's listening to this, make sure to check out our article on Breaking Lines on Sergio Oliveira that we published this week from Pedro Garvajo. Very good. Highly recommend it. But yeah, Sergio Oliveira and Mateus Uribe in the double pivot with Otavio and Tecatito typically on the wings this season. So what do you think is stopping Diaz from taking that next step? Done pretty well in terms of the transition from South America to Europe, but it does seem like there's more to come from him. And I think we saw that a bit in yesterday's match, honestly.
There are two players in front of Luis Diaz right now, Tecatito Corona and Otavio. Different players, so of course, Otavio more midfielder, Tecatito Corona more winger. Luis Diaz is more similarity to Corona than with Otavio, of course. But in that case, I think Luis Diaz is a sub player right now in Porto. He's a player with pace. It's a player that can give speed to Porto's game. I think Sergio Conceição used Luis Diaz to cause problems to Diogo Gonçalves, the winger in the right side of Benfica. He's getting well in this position. Carrilero, I don't know how the term is in English.
Wing back.
Yes, wing back. So I think that was the intention of Sergio Conceição. But Luis Diaz have two, three plays which caused some problems to Benfica. But in general terms, it wasn't as a big match of the Colombian winger.
Yeah, I think that's all the attention this match deserves. I mean, no disrespect, but this wasn't a great spectacle. It's, at the end of the day, it doesn't change much in terms of the playing field. Porto and Benfica split the points, split the spoils. Porto almost certain to get the automatic Champions League qualifying where with second place, whereas Benfica are going to almost certainly have to play their way in via the qualifiers, via the playoffs. We've seen just how much of a stumbling point that can be, both with Porto, Benfica, even with Sporting, you know, going back to the start of the season against LASC Linz. So definitely a roller coaster for a lot of Portuguese teams. We'll see what happens with that. This has pretty much solidified the table. We've got number two, Porto, number three, Benfica, four, Braga, five, Paços, and then a bit more congested in the middle of the table. Let's talk about number one for a bit, because Sporting are number one. They're flying. They had a bit of a blip in form, I think, around the end of April, right, with a lot of testy results. Even in some victories where they grinded out, such as against Farense, wasn't a super convincing performance, but few string of, you know, very good results for them, capped off, of course, by that win with 10 men against at Braga, and they've pretty much got nine fingers on the championship, right, as we call it, after beating Rio Ave 2-0. Talk to me about this Sporting team. It seemed like they were definitely at risk of maybe not losing the title, but getting themselves into a very tricky head-to-head title race with Porto in the final few weeks. They've really found a way to resist and grind out these impressive results. What did you make of Sporting's victory over Rio Ave, as well as their general form over the past few weeks?
Now I think the team is playing without pressure. The final test was in Braga when Sporting wins with 10 men, Mateus Nunes' goal. And now I think Sporting is already a champion. It feels like a champion. And it's the more solid team of the season in Portugal, and no losses until now. It's an amazing campaign of Sporting. No spectacular team, but a very consistent team defending. Ruben Amorim in the system with three in the back, two wing backs also. And then the stability with Palhinha and João Mário in the middle gives the team many comfort in gesturing the games. With Paulinho, the best displayed also in this Vila do Conde's match. Paulinho with many movements supporting the midfielders, also scoring a great goal to sealing the win. I think this Sporting team now is playing without pressure, many confidence, and the team defends really well. Didn't concede many options to score to the rivals, and then the title is near.
Definitely. You know, impressive result at Rio Ave, and we saw a bit of a surprising start for João Pereira. I think when Sporting do win this title, I think one of my favorite statistics will be the fact that João Pereira, a guy who's a year older than Ruben Amorim, was on this Sporting team. It's just a statistic that kind of blows my mind.
And they are friends.
They are friends, right? And I think that actually, if you look back, all the way back, I'm pretty sure João Pereira is the only one of this Sporting team that actually played an active role in a league title, you know, going back like probably 15 years to that, right, Benfica team of the mid-2000s. I mean, Antonio Adan, I think, won league title at Real Madrid, but he was, you know, third choice at the time. João Pereira, on the other hand, kind of the only one who actually, you know, played a leading role in that. I want to touch up on one player in particular from this match, because apart from João Pereira, who continues to be a presence in Portugal, one player who really impressed me, I've been really critical of in recent weeks, is Paulinho. You know, getting the start, Ruben Amorim continuing his confidence in him despite kind of a shaky run of form, and really getting an impressive performance as the center forward in Ruben Amorim's 3-4-3 and bagging a goal to lead Sporting to a 2-0 victory over Rio Ave. It's good to see from Paulinho, right? He's had a pretty difficult start to life in Lisboa, had a good game against Moreirense, but really kind of sandwiched between either bad performances or injury troubles. What did you make of Paulinho's performance? And do you think he's going to take a step up and return to that sharpshooter that we saw last season at Braga?
Yes, I think so. It's a case of lack of confidence and not a case of lack of quality. Paulinho is one of the best strikers in Portuguese league. We saw it in Braga. Ruben Amorim knows him well, and then I think this connection between Ruben Amorim and Paulinho, this confidence to improve in the team, sure, and could get his results in the long term. Paulinho is obviously a player who didn't get the best displays in his first times, but I think with more routines with the team, he can get better and better. It's a player not so youngster. He has 27, I think, or 28. But he's a player who gives intelligent moves on the front, principally in, supporting the midfielders, playing to back to the goal. And then I think Paulinho is really a good player technically, not a strong striker in the shooting. It's not a matador, como costumam dizer.
A killer in the box.
Yes. It's not a killer, but it's a striker who gives support to the midfielder and create plays.
Definitely. I think that a very promising performance from Paulinho. It's good for him to recover that confidence that seemed like had been betraying him. Definitely going to be an important player for Sporting. He's shown that he has what it takes to turn it around. One player, though, I want to touch up on, going back to not the last match, but two matches ago, and looking at the match on Saturday when Sporting faced off against bottom-placed Nacional at home. Theoretically, should be the easiest match, right? Going up against home against the last-place team in the league. But wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for Sporting. They made it hard for themselves. Even with 10 men, Nacional still did a good job of shutting up shop and causing Sporting a lot of issues. But we saw the emergence, or we saw one player kind of take the game by the scruff of his neck and change the game in Sporting's favor. And that man's name is Jovan Cabral. Coming off the bench, Cape Verdean winger, and setting up Zuhair Fadal's opening goal with a fantastic cross, winning a penalty and converting that. Overall, just a really promising super sub performance from the 22-year-old, a player who perhaps can be upset that he hasn't gotten more playing time. Obviously, Pedro Gonçalves has been one of the best players. But aside from that, you know, not really any player who's been on the level, be it Thiago Tomás or Nuno Santos, or, you know, yes, you know, good performances here and there, but nobody really as consistent as Pote. I think that Jovan, let's just say he's shown what he can offer in that performance against Nacional. Talk to me about Jovan. What do you make of him as a prospect? Just 22 years old, still a lot to come from him. How good do you think he is, and what does he need to work on to take that next step?
Jovan's best moments was in the last season, post-COVID. He was the Sporting main figure in that moment. But really, in this Sporting season, I think Ruben Amorim preferred the skills of Thiago Tomás and Nuno Santos in terms of characteristics. They are two players more quick attacking spaces. And this Sporting lives so well attacking spaces in the back of the rival's defense. And Jovan is not so quick. I think that is the principal point to Ruben Amorim prefer Thiago Tomás or Nuno Santos. And the other player is Pedro Gonçalves. Best scorer of the team, a difficult player to substitute on the team. In this case, I think Jovan Cabral's role on the team is really that super sub role to get off the bench and then helping the team with goals and assists.
Jovan, yeah, very much that agitador, as we say, yes, in Portugal, right? The kind of a player who will make that impact off the bench. Bit similar to Pedro Neto's goal. Pedro Neto's, you know, role for Portugal before he got injured, in making that difference off the bench. Yeah, and it's a bit tricky for him because he's that player who's going to make that difference against tired defenses. But with performances like that, it's not hardly a one-off. We've seen him score a ton of really crucial goals over the course of the past year or so. I can see Jovan's argument that he deserves a starting spot. But, you know, as you said, a player who had his best form, like Eduardo Quaresma, after the restart of football, and saw his role kind of take a dip with the arrivals of Nuno Santos as well as Pedro Gonçalves. So it'll be interesting, to say the least, what happens with Jovan. I do think he's going to have an important part to play, though.
And Sporting has no many options on the bench offensively.
Right. They don't have many options, right? They have Thiago Tomás now that Paulinho's sort of, you know, shown that, you know, Thiago Tomás off the bench, for the most part, we've seen them partner each other in some occasions. And, you know, as well as Gonzalo Plata, who hasn't really kicked on since joining as a highly rated Ecuadorian talent. But yeah, Jovan definitely the best super sub there. So a lot of potential there. Maybe we'll see something from Joelson Fernandez in the final, you know, weeks of the season. Who knows? We'll see. I know Joelson is also a highly rated talent from Alcochete Academy. I want to touch up on another player now from Sporting, though, because one player who hasn't had perhaps the impact of Pedro Gonçalves or Antonio Dan, but has been pretty important so far, has been João Mário, returning after 5 years, I think, four or five years after that, you know, huge transfer to Inter Milan and nailing down a starting spot alongside João Palhinha in the double pivot. And we've seen him have an important role in a lot of big games, especially that match against Porto. I thought he was one of Sporting's better performers. But overall, I do think that while he does have his value, João Mário also doesn't really offer certain things in possession or in the final third that a player such as Daniel Bragança and Mateus Nunes may offer. Talk to me about João Mário. Do you think that Sporting should make his loan permanent? And what is your take on him getting the majority of minutes over players such as Mateus Nunes or Daniel Bragança?
It's not a brilliant season of João Mário. I think that it's clear. But I also think that that João Mário is a crucial player on the team, because this Sporting team is many vertical. It gets the ball to the attack with quickness. And João Mário brings some calm, some pause to the attacks. And he gets the ball, he chooses the best options. And that is important. Mateus Nunes is a pace midfielder. He's a player to get the ball to the attack. Also, Bragança have more similarities. But João Mário is not a player who takes many risks. And I think that is important to bring some calm and some organization to the Sporting attacks. Also, for João Mário to be a player who was born in the academy, I think that is important that Sporting guarantee his continuity for the future.
Definitely. I think that João Mário's leadership role is super important, given the fact that a lot of these players, no offense, but they just aren't, or like winners, like João Mário, a Euro winner, is. They just don't have that experience. You know, nothing wrong with that. So definitely important to get him in. I do think they will try to make his loan permanent, but I do think that Amorim needs to be a bit more flexible in his scheme, you know, try to catch some teams off guard by going with potentially Bragança, Palhinha, and Nunes in midfield. You know, who knows? Trying to find something with that 3-5-2.
Yes, Ruben Amorim tries that in some games of the season.
Right, exactly. So for the most part, he's gone with that 3-4-3. But, you know, we've seen, especially in that match against Vitória, where he will try that diamond in 3-5-2, some cases, you know, a different, similar scheme. Overall, Sporting are about to win the league title in 19 years. And that's something special. That's something really special. But I want to get into the other team on that match. I want to get into Rio Ave. Rio Ave, last season, beat up Famalicão for the final Europa League spot on the final day of the season with that, you know, really impressive attack of Mery Taremi and Nuno Santos. Santos going the other way to Sporting, whereas Taremi joined Porto, and both players, you know, being starters in both teams. Rio Ave haven't really managed to replace either, though. They haven't managed to find an adequate replacement. So Yoav, getting into the Europa League qualifiers on the final day of the season, of course, having that, I don't know, 13 penalty kick, just one of the longest penalty kick shootouts I've ever seen in my life against AC Milan back in September, I think. And just an incredible shootout, came so close to beating Milan. But, you know, of course, losing Carlos Carvalhal and now with Miguel Cardoso as manager. Now, they're not chasing Europa League football. Now, they're fighting relegation. Talk to me about this Yoav season. I mean, what has gone wrong for them? I mean, they haven't been terrible for the entirety of the season. It just seems like over the past few weeks, they've been definitely one of the coldest teams in terms of form in Portugal. And things could get scary for them because this relegation fight in Portugal is no joke. It really is.
Yes, Yoav is a big disappointment in this Portuguese league. I think the problem begins with the incapacity to choose a best coach or a coach that brings some guarantees to substitute Carlos Carvalhal. And then also the players. You have Luz and Taremi, Nuno Santos, and the players who came to the attack didn't get the same performances. In case of Taremi, for sure, there are no players similar in the squad of Yoav. And then Miguel Cardoso was not a coach who can improve the team. And now I think Yoav is the worst team in the league in terms of moments. A team with problems defending, a team who didn't create chances, didn't score goals. It's not completely excluded the idea of a relegation.
Yeah. Miguel Cardoso, I mean, I think that he's a coach who had a lot of promise back in the day. Back in his first spell at Yoav, but now it just seems like certain, you know, failed moves at Nantes, at Celta, AEK Athens, you know, going with the Fernando Santos route and trying to prove himself in Greece, and now just not really doing a great job at Yoav. Sad to see, and we'll see what happens with Yoav, because in terms of quality, you know, I think they have this quality in their squad to be a perennial top half team. This is pretty out of the ordinary for them, shall we say, to go from playing European football against Milan to being in the second division would just be pretty incredible for them. But we'll see what happens with regards to Yoav. I want to move on, though, from these two matches and take a look at some managerial changes. So the first one, obviously the most important in Portuguese football, is the news that Pepa is going to join Vitória de Guimarães. This summer it seems pretty much nailed on. Pepa, Vitória have been, how do we say this? They've been sort of a powder keg this season, letting go of Ivo Vieira at the end of the season of last season, and then kind of been a power vacuum, shall we say. We've talked about this before, João Henriquez, right? But seems like they're going to go with Pepa, who has had a fantastic season at Paços de Ferreira, going from a team that's going to be probably playing, that's certainly going to be playing European football next season, to a team that probably won't. What do you make of the choice from Pepa to go to Vitória? Do you think it's the right call for them in terms of going for him? And do you think that Pepa should have aimed higher, or do you think it's a good choice for him?
It's difficult. Vitória is a difficult club to work. And normally, the coaches who arrived didn't stay many years. It's a difficult club with some desires of improving, but season after season, they didn't get the best results. It's a squad with problems in the back. The level of defensive players are not the same of the offensive players, Quaresma, Estupinhan, Marcus Edwards, for example. But in the back, they have so many problems. Many youngsters didn't adapt well to the Portuguese football. And in reality, Paços de Ferreira is a more stable club to work of than Vitória. It's a big step if it works well, but not a great step if the context of the club gets paper.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but did Vitória's sporting director, Carlos Freitas, not just depart just a few weeks ago?
Yes. I think they will leave the club, or leaving right now. I'm not sure. But yes, not working more in the club.
Yeah. So Paços de Feira currently fifth in the league with 49 points with three games to play. Vitória are sixth, 7 points behind. So it is confirmed that Paços will have that fifth place spot. So Vitória, on the other hand, a lot closer to Belenenses, Moreirense, and Santa Clara. So it's an interesting step for him. But I do think that Pepa, you know, at least in the earlier stages, because Paços have dropped off a bit over the past few months, but I do think that apart from Amorim, who certainly should get Coach of the Year, I think that Pepa has a strong case to be that runner-up. Because apart from Amorim, I'm not sure there's a coach who's done a better job in Portugal this season than he has with that Paços squad, right? Getting them to European football, getting them to fifth place, getting the most out of players such as, you know, Steven Eustáquio, Luis Carlos, Jordi, Luther Singh, so on and so on.
It's probably Paços lose their best players.
Probably. Definitely Eustáquio, I think, which we'll get into in a
Bruno
bit.
Bruno Costa also.
Let's just talk about Pepa. What do you make of Pepa as a coach, and how do you think a Pepa team would work in Vitória de Guimarães? Which players, you know, we've talked about Vitória having to bring in new defenders, which I completely agree with. When you look at the players that they have right now, you know, Moomin, Utada, I think that there isn't any Tapsoba in this defense, right? There isn't an Edwin Tapsoba. So definitely agree that they need to bring in more quality in the back line. But overall, how do you think a Pepa Vitória would shape up?
Pepa is a coach with a positive mentality. Normally, didn't brings the teams to confront the great squads, for example, of this Portuguese league, with a defensive approach. But I think Vitória, having so many problems to defend well, it's a complicated scenario. Pepa will have the need of transfers of new players to the defensive back, because his game passes many for that organization. The defensive back, their relationship with the midfielders line. Also, this Paços Ferreira is a good team, but not so creative in terms of offensive ideas. And I think this Vitória is many exigent step to Pepa.
Yeah, Vitória, they're a team that has what it takes to be a perennial European team, right? Pretty much nailed down.
Vitória is like a Roma, for example.
Right, exactly. They're
many,
like
many ambitions, but the reality it's other stuff.
That's a great comparison. Vitória de Guimarães are the Portuguese Roma, essentially, right? They have a lot of quality, I think, in midfield with players such as Pepe Lu and André, and as well as in attack with Marcus Edwards and Rochinha, André Almeida, Oscar. You know, I think that there's definitely potential there for Pepa to do a lot. If there's any player that you think will go up two levels or three levels under Pepa, because we've seen just how much he can work magic with players such as Eustáquio and, you know, Luther Singh, another great example, you know, a player who's been really important for them. Really so many players. I mean, Marco Baixinho, so many players who've gone up another level under Pepa this season. If there's any player that you think is ready to take the next step under Pepa and who would just go another level with him, who do you think it is?
Vitória's biggest talent right now is André Almeida. He's having more and more minutes, more and more confidence in the first team. And I think they will definitely get a role player in the next season with Pepa. André Almeida is really one of the principal prospects in the Portuguese football outside of the big teams.
André Almeida, a player who, not the André Almeida of Benfica, But I do recall him playing right back on one occasion for Vitoria. Player who's, you know, really versatile and technically gifted. We're going to be seeing a lot of him. And I think that staying at Vitoria is the right move for him. Tomas, you know Vasco Samuco, I'm sure. Vasco, friend of the show.
I told him that I was talking to you.
Really? We'll have to have you guys on together as a joint podcast for this summer. You know, a few months ago, I had Vasco on, and I think it was in March. There were four Portuguese coaches left in the Europa League round of 16, I believe. And I said, okay, so we've got Paulo Fonseca, we've got Luis Castro, and the other one, Pedro Martins. We were struggling for the other one. It took us like 5 minutes and we could not think of it. And then I finally started to search it up. And then I realized it was Jose Mourinho. And it's like, we just started laughing because we sometimes forget that Mourinho is a Portuguese coach. You know, it's like he's been out of Portugal for so long that we almost forget that he's Portuguese sometimes. But he is, and as such, we have to talk about him right now because some massive news this week coming out that Mourinho will replace another Portuguese coach, Paulo Fonseca, and take charge of the Italian Vitória de Guimarães, or Roma, at the end of this season, okay? So I don't know what to make of this. I was, you know, waiting for our talk today to go over my thoughts on the Mourinho move. But let's get into this because this is going to be interesting to say the least. What was your impression when you saw the news that Mourinho was going to take over Roma on, I think it was Tuesday?
It was a total surprise, of course, I think to everyone. Mourinho leaves Italy as a champion, as a king in Europe also with Inter. And he returns to get Roma, the seventh spot right now in Italy. It's a different team, a different challenge. I think it's positive to Mourinho leave the Premier League right now. It's so complicated for him to get more opportunities in the Premier League. But in Italy, I think they can improve a little bit. It's a different ambience also. But right now, Mourinho needs to prove himself. It's impossible to... how to say that?
You can say it in Portuguese and I can try to translate it for you.
É impossível negar que o estatuto de Mourinho não é o mesmo. The Mourinho status, it's not the same right now.
Right, right.
Then Roma is a step down, clearly, because Roma, like Vitória de Guimarães, has many problems defensively, individual and collectively, with Paulo Fonseca, and Mourinho with Thiago Pinto, certainly an important person to this entrance of Mourinho in the Serie A. Will have to work so well in the markets to compose this Roma team.
Yeah, Roma, it has not been a good season for them. Did get to the Europa League semifinals, only to get absolutely destroyed by Manchester United. Currently seventh, which is somewhat misleading of a position because Lazio have a game in hand, and if they do beat Fiorentina, then they will be 12 points ahead of Roma, who are in seventh, whereas Roma just 2 points ahead of Sassuolo in eighth. Before we get into more Mourinho stuff, though, what do you think of Paulo Fonseca? What do you think of his job that he's done at Roma? Do you think the sacking is deserved? You know, I'm glad that I have you here because you do watch a lot of Serie A and other leagues. Talk to me about Fonseca, kind of a strange 2 years for him in Italy. And that being said, I think that he will have a decent amount of offers. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of coaching vacancies. I can see him managing in another top five league next season.
This recent months was clearly a disappointment. Paulo Fonseca lose control of this Roma team, and defensively a chaos. Offensively, a team where we that can explore the counterattacks, but no much more. Paulo Fonseca's first season in Roma was positive, in my point of view. a team with instability, with problems, with a squad that are not so powerful comparing to Juve, Inter, Milan. Also, it's a positive season. This season also, till January, was positive. Roma were fighting for the goals, were fighting for the champions in Serie A. Good campaign in Europe also. But then there are many conflicts with Deco, for example. I think that was not easy to Paulo Fonseca in terms of control of the group, of the squad. And then Paulo Fonseca was composing the team more defensively with man marking, for example, that was not useful in the habits of Paulo Fonseca's teams. And right now, Roma is a complete chaos.
Absolutely. I do think that Fonseca will bounce back. I mean, he's already had success at, you know, other clubs such as Shakhtar, and who knows, maybe. I don't think he'll go back to Shakhtar, but there is going to be a vacancy, I believe, this summer at that club. But I think that he'll get another job in the top five league. Maybe Lyon? I don't know. That's a possibility. I don't think that he'll go to a Portuguese team, because I don't see any, unless Conceição leaves. But even that being said, I think he's the kind of man who would rather try his luck in another.
Maybe to Benfica, in case of Jorge Jesus leaving to Flamengo.
Maybe that's another one. Yeah, I think he'll be fine. But I want to touch up more on this Roma thing, because, you know, I think that Roma, a club that is currently seventh, and there's a much wider gap between the six teams, Lazio, Napoli, Milan, Juventus, Atalanta, and Inter, much wider gap between them and Roma than Roma and Hellas Verona or Sampdoria or Sassuolo and so on and so on. So for Mourinho to go to this team, you know, a non-Super League team, a team that, for one, has had, you know, a decent amount of injury issues in the past year, that has had definitely a leaky back line, that absolutely has had one of the worst big game records. I think, looking at the biggest teams in Europe, they've been a complete catastrophe when it comes to big games this season under Paulo Fonseca. And I think that's the biggest reason why he's getting his marching orders after just 2 years. And finally, an ownership, the Friedkin Group, coming out of H-Town, Houston, Texas, which hasn't really spent much in the way of money, you know, bringing in, they've made some cheap signings, such as Pedro Rodriguez on a free transfer, such as, you know, I think getting Borja Mayoral on loan, although I believe there's an option to buy there with Mayoral. But overall, a lot of work to be done. I think it's clear that this Roma team reached their peak in, what was it, that second place finish in 2017, I think, and of course got to the Champions League semifinal.
It is probably to see Portuguese players in the Roma squad next year.
That's what I want to talk about as well, because this Roma team, it's aging and it needs a rebuild job. You know, it needs a makeover. And I can't help but think Mourinho is going to be getting his connections, getting Jorge Mendes, and getting a lot of Portuguese players, and trying to, you know, rebuild this team with a few Portuguese players. Renato Sanches has been mentioned.
The problem is Roma probably didn't get the European competitions.
Right. That's an issue as well. Currently seventh, not playing anymore in Europe. So not only is that going to be kind of, is obviously going to be hurting them in terms of attracting new players, such as Renato Sanches, who, you know, if he stays at Lille, he's going to be playing Champions League football next season. But it's also really big in terms of, you know, a club that's still dealing with the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, and that needs that Europa League, you know, Champions League prize TV money to fund these movements. So it's just a bit weird. But who do you think Mourinho, if you were Mourinho, who would you be targeting to help fix this squad?
In terms of Portuguese players, it's difficult. The main necessity for Roma is defensive players, defensive midfielder, defensive center backs. Also, in terms of wings, there are some problems. Probably in the right side, Spinazzola is a good player. Karsdorp, it's a more limited player, like Bruno Perez. Also,
Brian, is Brian?
I think Mourinho will play.
Answer. Is the Texan Brian Reynolds the answer on the right side, you think?
Yes. I think Mourinho will bring in a defensive four. Are changing Paulo Fonseca's system right now. But it's difficult to appoint a name. Do you have anyone?
For the right back position? For the Agireta, the face of the cuatro? I think that, looking at the right back position, yeah, Bruno Perez, I think, leaves. Karsdorp, I don't think Karsdorp is going to start for Mourinho team. I mean, he's done okay under Fonseca, you know, finally fit, but I think they're going to, I could definitely see them selling Karsdorp and having Brian Reynolds competing against a more experienced player because, I don't know, part of me thinks that Friedkin Group would want him to, you know, excel and impress there. So I think that potential for them to sell Karsdorp and bring in a more experienced player, maybe João Pereira, we'll see. The better question, perhaps, is who stays in the lineup if you're Mourinho, you know? Because it's, I think you would find fewer players in that case than, you know, when talking about who you want to sell, you know? For you, if you're Mourinho, who stays in the lineup?
Right now, Zeko is an old player. It's I'm curious to see if he continues in Roma's squad. Fazio and Smalling are players that can give some stability in the back for Mourinho's style. Let's say the things in his way. But there are many players incapable of a strong Roma side in the midfield. I think there are in need of a defensive type of midfielder, like Højbjerg, for example, in this Mourinho Tottenham. Diawara is a ball-playing midfielder, Villar also, Pellegrini. It's important the return of Zaniolo to get some creativity to the midfield. Mkhitaryan, it will encounter Mourinho again in the United. Manchester United didn't get so well. But this Roman side has many problems, not only defensively, individually, but also in the tech. There are no replacements to Dzeko, for example. Borja Mayoral is a strong alternative, but not a player to get in the 11, I think. There are many problems, I think. Roma will need a revolution in the squad to get Champions League in the next season.
Do you think that Paulinho is worth looking at if you're Mourinho?
It costs Paulinho 16 million to Sporting. I think no, because it will need a big investment, like 25, 30 million. And right. Paulinho is a 28 or 27-year-old player. It's not... I don't see that happening.
I agree with you that I think that Mourinho needed to step away from the Premier League. And I think that as such, Serie A is a good move for it. I also think that... Mourinho is not the kind of guy who will be, you know, demanding all these young players. You know, definitely more of a coach who is a short-term manager, you know, who I think similarly to his nemesis Antonio Conte will go with that 29-year-old or 28-year-old rather than the 21-year-old long-term project who they want to develop, you know. So I think that... That's one positive, I think, from the Friedkin Group. You know, not only do you get a coach who is, you know, experienced in winning and who, you know, has had a tough run of the past few years, but who is still a legend in Italy and I think, you know, has that aura, but also a manager who is dealing with an aging squad. And some of those players will probably leave. I could see Edin Dzeko leaving and them going big for a player such as Dusan Vlahovic. Then again, are they going to be able to afford a Vlahovic with no European football and with Friedkin, you know, being kind of a penny pincher? I'm not 100% sure. Overall, though, this Roma team, the Italian Vittoria de Guimarães, needs a lot of help. And I don't know. I think Mourinho... I personally would have loved to see Roberto De Zerbi in charge of this Roma team. I don't know about you, but I think it would have been a wise choice. You know, at the end of the day, the devil is working hard, but Jorge Mendes is always working harder. And he is going to get his clients the best jobs available until the end of the world. So that's that. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Mourinho at Roma. Wish him all the best because that club is going to need it. I want to get into the talent of the week section, though, where we talk about a player in the Portuguese league who is impressing, or a Portuguese player or a player with Portuguese roots who's impressing outside of Portugal. So I want to get your take, Tomas. Who is your talent of the week for today's episode of the Corta Linhas podcast?
We can talk about André Almeida, for example, the Vitória player. It's really an enthusiastic talent, and technically many, so many gifted. He's a strong player in small spaces, and he can eliminate the pressure in with the pass or also with the transportation of the ball. He really is a player to clearly step up in the next years with Pepe, probably. I think we will see André Almeida in one of the Portuguese big sides.
Definitely. I like André Almeida a lot as well. I think that he's, you know, definitely technically gifted and can, you know, I think that he's going to play an important role under Pepe, assuming that Pepe does join next season at Vitória. So super exciting to see what happens with regards to that. My talent of the week, drumroll, same, so coming from the same place as the Friedkin Group in Houston, and his name is Albert Ellis. Albert is a Honduran international, started off, has, you know, an incredible rise to playing in Liga MX, then eventually went to Houston, did pretty well there, and then got a move to Boa Vista with a lot of comings and goings last summer, you know, bringing in players such as Reggie Cannon and Angel Gomez, who has definitely been the star of the show since joining on loan from Lille. But Ellis has, you know, impressed me a lot in recent weeks. He's a player who I think is very much a big game player, because even when he was kind of struggling to stay consistent, struggling to adapt, we saw him score some massive goals and assists against, you know, in that 3-0 victory against Benfica in November, bagging a goal against Porto in February, and really, you know, getting into hot form over the past month for Boavista, scoring a goal against Belenenses, Saad, grabbing two assists against Joao, grabbing another assist against Paços de Ferreira, and recently bagging a brace on Saturday against Santa Clara in a 3-3 draw, and definitely, you know, an important part of this Boavista attack. There were definitely some concerns for, you know, a few months back that Boavista, after so much investment, that they would go down, and it still isn't guaranteed or anything. Boavista currently in the relegation playoffs. They do have a game in hand at the moment, and they're going to be playing off against Tondela today. So massive game for them. If they do defeat Tondela, then that means that they go ahead. Rio Ave and Famalicão, who also have a game today that they'll be playing against Santa Clara. So, and obviously just a very fun, jam-packed relegation fight. And Boavista, they're going to be doing whatever they can to stay up, to stay alive. Talk to me about Albert Ellis, though, because I think that he's shown in recent weeks that he can be a player who, I think, similar a lot in many ways to Musa Marega, you know, energetic, physically imposing, who is almost like a mix between a striker and a winger, and who can definitely explore the space in behind the defense, right, between the fullback and the center back. I think he would be good value because he's finally adapted in Portugal and he's getting these consistent performances. So I think he's definitely going to be worth taking a look at for Porto. Maybe a higher up team such as Vitória, such as, you know, maybe, I don't know, Passos or Braga. But I, in general, I think that there's, it's been kind of a hot and cold season for Ellis, and I think that there's a lot to come from him. What have you made of Ellis, though, this season?
Totally agree. It's not a coincidence that two of the best divisions of Albert Ellis was against Porto and against Benfica, because in that case, Boavista was exploring counterattacks, open spaces, and then in that type of game, Ellis is really a devastating player. It's a player which caused many problems to the rivals. It's many quick player, physically strong also. He really is a powerful player in open spaces. Not so powerful with the team having more the ball, having more patient attacks. But I think they will get this step probably if Boavista gets relegated. Albert Ellis will not be relegated with Boavista.
I definitely agree. So very glad to see him, and to another degree, Reggie Cannon doing well after going from Texas to Portugal. The future is bright, I think, for both of them. But with that being said, thank you so much, Tomas, for coming on the show. It was a pleasure to have you on and have your valuable insight. And I really hope to have you on again soon. Where can the people find you and listen to and read your fantastic insight?
My Twitter, Tomás R. da Cunha, on 11 Sports on TSF for the Portuguese people. And then that's it. Thank you, Zach, for the invitation. It's a little bit difficult to use technical terms in English, but
we'll do this in Portuguese next time.
yes, or in Spanish. So try. Thank you.
Of course. Um abraço.
Thank you. Abraço.